Hello and welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave, and we're here today to talk about video games and books and movies and all sorts of exciting things, websites, as a matter of fact, and services. This is part of the Des Plaines Public Library, and I'm joined here by librarians Tony.
Hello.
And special guest Gwen.
Hey there.
How are you doing, guys?
Great. How are you?
Good.
I'm all right. I've been having a lot of fun. So, Tony, you're going to start us off. What are you going to talk about today?
Sure. I'm sharing a book, Tiger Man, by Nick Harkaway. It was published a couple years ago. I had the pleasure of reading it a while ago, but I just recently revisited it so I could share with you guys. And I'm really excited about this book. It just seemed to hit all of the right notes for me in that it starts off lighthearted in that it's a story about a sergeant who is stationed on an island that is kind of in murky legal waters between... There's no real true jurisdiction, and he's a British sergeant kind of meant to quietly finish his career, which was filled with all sorts of action and adventure, but it doesn't really go into what he has done. But it also opens with the unlikely pairing of this sergeant, Lester Ferris, with this orphan boy who just happens to be a comic book nerd, happens to be an internet nerd, and is just really otherwise hyper and, I don't know, and they meet and they engage on this level where... the kid is idolizing this sergeant for what he is and what he can be. And very quickly, we realize that this island is filled with all sorts of... it's kind of like the Mos Eisley, a hive of wretched scum and villainy of the world because of the fact that it's in these murky legal waters. So we quickly find out there's a crime and there's, you know, people being murdered. And, well, this kid realizes this sergeant is a perfect fit for a crime fighter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he kind of sees this man as something larger than life in his own eyes. And then it's at this point in the novel where after they narrowly, you know, escape what could be a fatal shooting in a downtown area, where Lester is actually, it kind of takes on this magical realism vibe, if you will. Mm-hmm. Lester is actually visited at night by this tiger and just ends up petting this tiger for a while. And it's like, well, what, you know, that doesn't really make any sense in reality, but it has this profound effect on the character. Mm-hmm. And then later on the boy. So... he's slowly transformed into this larger-than-life character, and he goes by the title Tiger Man, you know, puts on this mask and this body armor. And it does turn into somewhat of a superhero story, but it's still just a regular, mundane fiction underneath it all. Like, the things that the sergeant does are all totally within this soldier's capabilities, and it's just him using the technology and the tools and weapons available to him. So it turns into a really needed, almost mystery and an action story, but it's really, at its core, is this relationship between this man and his, you know, maybe surrogate orphaned son kind of thing. I just really absolutely enjoyed this, and it's paced very well, too. It doesn't seem to go too fast into the action. It really takes its time to develop, I would say.
So is there a lot of action? You started off kind of talking about it's a mundane, simple story with this bit of fantasy, but is there a lot of action scenes in the book?
Yes, there are a lot of action scenes, and they tend to move the story forward very definitively. If there's things blowing up, it's blowing up, and then there's pretty large consequences, and you feel those consequences throughout the rest of the pages if something happens, or if they instigate something. It seems to be a momentum that carries forward. And yeah, I guess by mundane, I mean just it's not super, there's nothing supernatural about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kind of like I'm thinking of the beginning of Dark Knight when there's the regular Batman, the guys in hockey pads.
Yes,
is it something like that?
Yeah, a lot like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
How did you find out about this book?
Sure. I think it was on a library reads list, which is, I think, curated by the selections of librarians. I think that's what library reads is. It's different librarians write in and say, this is something I found interesting. Maybe you'll like it. I think it also showed up on a Goodreads list, books chosen by librarians also. So I think it was actually kind of buried on like page 2 or 3, and I was looking for book group picks, and I saw this one, and I thought, man, this would be a good one for a book group. I don't know that for sure I'm going to do it, but maybe eventually we can do it as a book group.
Audience-wise, would this also appeal to teens besides adults?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. I personally like certain stories with, you know, the aging older guy. I don't know that teens can necessarily relate to that, but the teens can definitely relate to the boy in this story and how cool the kid is. And he talks in like leet speak, which if, you know, it's like a hacker dialect that people on the internet talk, uses references from all sorts of comic books and things like that. So it's definitely good in that it brings out two different generations.
Cool.
Yeah.
a rare fiction book for you. You're usually nonfiction.
Yes, I am.
This and Ready Player One are the only fiction books you've contributed to the podcast. Mm-hmm,
that's right.
When you pick fiction books, do you wait for something that's strongly recommended like this as opposed to just trying something new? Is that your approach?
I would say so. I mean, I've tried a few books and only get 60 or 80 pages in, and I sometimes can't finish them. So
yeah,
if it hooks
too.
Me by page 100 or so, I'll continue reading it and finish it. But yeah, I am the type to tend to wait for a strong recommendation rather than just pick something off the shelf. I just feel like I don't have very good luck that way.
Oh, sure.
Did you have a chance to look up anything about the author?
Only a few things. I mean, his name came up. He also wrote a nonfiction book about technology. I think it's called The Blind Giant or something like that. And he's written two other fiction books that also have really interesting premises. I started listening to one of his other books, and it didn't just capture me the same way this one did. It took place inside of like a shopkeeper's type of thing. And then there was like, I think maybe even time travel or something involved in it. So it was much more of a science fiction. He has other two books. One of them is called Angel Maker, but I still haven't read it.
But this one is Tiger Man. Mm-hmm. What was the author again?
Nick Harkaway, sorry.
Okay, Tiger Man. We have it here at the library, of course, but check it out for yourself if you get the opportunity. Thanks, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Gwen, what would you like to talk about today?
I would like to talk about something that became part of my life, or maybe I should say I incorporated into my life many years ago. Not to sound way too serious here, but that is Book TV, which is a part of C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I first found out about it was many moons ago. I was just flipping the channels at home in the living room on the TV, and I recognized the name of a journalist who was interviewing someone.
Mm.
I believe it was a fairly well-known author. And I thought, what is this thing? So I stuck with it for a while. It turned out to be Book TV. It started, if memory serves, 1998, so it's been around quite a while, not quite 20 years. And it has such an interesting and wide array of interviews and other material. And you can also catch this on your laptop, if you like, afterwards.
Mm.
You know, sometimes these things go a couple of hours, and it might get a little long for some people.
Oh, geez.
Unless
you're into that sort of thing.
Really, unless you're a serious couch potato, which, you know, for the purposes of this, I think is okay.
Yeah.
But there is so much to this. They have something called In-Depth, which is, according to their description, a comprehensive live 3-hour look at one author's work with questions from viewers via phone, email, and social media. People come out of the woodwork. I'm trying to get through on the phone years ago. I just had to keep at it. And I'm a pretty persistent person, so I just kept dialing and dialing and dialing. But you can also email, and the person from Book TV, these are very seasoned interviewers, they try to pick, I think, an interesting and, you know, different array, not always the same old thing in terms of questions. And the flow is always different because the authors are such really engaging people.
Sure.
I know right off the top, 3 hours probably sounds like a very long time, like, you know, in this age of very fast time and culture. But I'll tell you, if you're drawn into one of Book TV's presentations, it doesn't feel, at least to me, like 3 hours. There are things that I could even, you know, that we didn't cover, or they didn't cover, rather, that I wish they would have, like, a postscript or something
sure.
like that. Another program is called Afterwards, and they define it as their signature program, an interview show in which authors of the latest nonfiction books are interviewed by journalists, public policymakers, legislators, and others familiar with their work. And you can find all these details at booktv.org. There's no way one person could really watch and or listen to all of this stuff. You just wouldn't sleep. You'd have to stay up like 24 hours, either, you know, a combination between the television or other media. But I always leave one of these programs, even if I don't hear the entire thing, having learned at least one thing, usually many. And another thing that Book TV shows up at is book fairs. And that's how I came to go to my first book fair a few years ago, which was in Texas. So I went to Austin, and there's something to be said for being at a program or an event, whether it's book fair or sports or whatever, being there in person. just the live quality of it, you cannot replicate. Mm-hmm. You have access to the authors. I really enjoyed myself, and I felt like somebody had just taken three CDs and stuck them in my head and filled them with knowledge.
Sure.
And I wanted to process it all later after I got home. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun. And it's every weekend. And if I didn't make this clear before, it's nonfiction. So mm-hmm. for nonfiction junkies like me, I do read the occasional fiction book. It's usually when I do a book discussion here at the library. You know, that way it forces me to read fiction. And I'm hoping to read more fiction, but I say that every year and, you know. But the nonfiction is more me. But it's such an interesting array. I have no idea how many people listen to this, you know, on a given weekend. It's got to be a lot, gauging from the fact that it's extremely difficult to get
in.
Sure. Right.
It strikes me like inside the actor's studio, like a very studious interview, a very careful interview. Does it have that sort of tone?
I would say it depends on both the person being interviewed as well as the interviewer. So whatever is going on between the interviewer and the interviewee kind of sets the tone. Hmm. I have seen several veteran interviewers, and there are lighter moments. It's not always super serious. Sometimes they get into aspects of the author's life. Sometimes the people calling and or emailing and or texting will bring up things that the author would not even have thought of talking about that day. And I think it's a great exercise in learning on numerous levels. And if the author has just done a book, that's part of the conversation, but by no means the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a great resource for readers, writers, anyone interested in the particular subject matter. Do you have a particular author interview or book interview that stands above or stands apart from some of the others you've seen? Do you have one particular strong recommendation? Not to put you on the spot. I don't know if you've prepared
it. I knew you were going to ask me that. It changes. You know, I would say that what I first started watching years ago, and it may be close to 1998 when I started. I cannot recall the exact year, but it's been a long time. It's been many years. Sebastian Younger's was fascinating, and I would recommend anybody go back and listen to that, even though I didn't get to hear the whole thing. He talked about a lot of very relevant things to now, people in the military, how war affects them, how war affected him as a journalist and as an author. A lot of things that maybe people will talk about between themselves in conversation, but they've never heard somebody be quite this brutally frank. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
On the set. So I would say I'd really have to think about it, not to beg
sure.
off from your
no,
question.
But that's
completely.
A great example of one that would,
yeah,
that
because,
would have a profound effect yeah. on the writer and those reading it too.
Yeah, and I would say for the most part, the people that have been on are pretty candid. If you're looking for a photo op or, you know, strictly a public relations piece, this is not the program for you. Those interviewers ask direct questions. They don't mince with words. They're very professional about it. But it is not what somebody would consider a puff piece. It's a multi-layered, multifaceted type of thing. And so I would say, you know, if you want to go to Younger's one, start with that. If you've never heard it before, just to see what it's like and see if it's your cup of tea, so to speak.
I hear a lot of people who love documentaries on Netflix. And they're like, where can I get more? Is there a new one? Is there a new one? Is there a new one? Like, my girlfriend loves to watch documentaries. And so this sounds like a great resource. I can say, hey, there's 18 years of interviews on a variety of topics by a variety of authors just sitting out there on booktv.org. It sounds like a wonderful way for her to spend gobs of time watching these interviews.
Sure. It's fascinating. And like I say, to me, the time does not weigh heavily. It doesn't drag because it's something that interests me quite a bit. You know, they're very involved, they being Book TV, in social media. So, you know, you're dealing with Facebook and Twitter, and they have their own podcast. And there's just a lot to choose from as the technology has expanded. And I would say, you know, she would have her pick, your girlfriend, of, okay, is there a particular author? Or do I just want to see what they have on their homepage and take it from there? So if you're a new person to this, you might want to start out just with the homepage, or you can do a search, and that in and of itself will take off and lead to a journey of its own.
Sure. Well, that sounds wonderful, Gwen. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
We'll Thanks. Come back to Gwen and Tony in a little bit when we do our discussion of Thebe. But first, I need to talk about Pokemon Go. You've probably heard some horrendous things in the news about very odd circumstances. I believe there was a car accident involved with Pokemon Go. So let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about what it is. Pokemon Go is a video game that you play on your phone. Now, in the world of Pokemon, which is an established property, there were these little animals that you would find and you would catch, and then you could have them fight each other. And these were games that came out when Tony and I were children and have been coming very popular all this time. Now there's a game called Pokemon Go that you play on your phone where you walk around your town and you walk around your neighborhood, your workplace, the local parks, and find Pokemon that way. Instead of leading a character through a video game, going from town to town in this little virtual world on your Game Boy, now you're the one walking. And you're the one looking, and you find them. When your phone buzzes, you look at your phone, and it says there's a Pikachu nearby, and you tap the thing, catch them in your Pokeball, just like they do on the TV show and in the video games, and you've got your very own Pokemon. So it's kind of had a wild social impact with people getting outside and fighting each other on the street. Are you playing Pokemon? Yeah, we're playing Pokemon, and you're seeing selfies posted. You're seeing funny pictures of people finding Pokemon in compromising situations. A lot of them, there's been pictures of Pokemon in the middle of the street and jokes about walking into the street. Don't walk into the street. You don't have to walk into the street to catch these Pokemon. But you are out. You are out walking the roads, walking the paths, going to parks. There are what they call Pokestops, which are minor landmarks in your town. Things like the Des Plaines Theater across the street is a Pokestop, and you can go there and you can find some extra supplies for your journey, virtual supplies, of course, for your journey. And then there are major landmarks are called gyms, and our own Des Plaines Public Library is a gym. If you are looking for a place to battle, you can come to the library and set up in the lobby and challenge. I guess it's, who is it from IT that's currently
Patrick,
the gym?
Patrick
might be the gym leader right now. I'm coming for you, Patrick, with my Pikachu and my, I don't have a Snorlax. But anyway, so it's been a lot of fun. I have been out of the house walking around. I never walk. I never go anywhere. I stay home. I watch TV. I play video games. But now I'm like, oh, I should walk there, and let's see how many Pokemon I catch along the way. Or, oh, we should walk around the block, and then I'll have my phone in my hand, and I'll see if I can hit any Pokestops as I go. So it's really kind of wild to be out in the world, just doing normal things, walking around the block, going to, you know, the restaurant or wherever you need to go, and finding Pokemon along the way, having this fun little game to play along the way.
Yeah, and I want to add, too, that there's actually a resource that you gather just by taking steps, right? I mean, it helps you. I haven't done this exact mechanic yet, but if you take steps while the app is open and on your person, it'll progress you through incubating one of the eggs and hatching another Pokemon.
Yep. So I'm half a kilometer on my first egg, even though I only put it in the incubator like a day or two ago. I've already walked half a kilometer without even trying, without even paying attention. Yeah. So it monitors that. There are Pokestops that you can go and you can charge up for 30 minutes so that extra Pokemon appear. So like people will set up at a place and they'll use one of these items and just other people will come and say, oh, you've used a, I forget what it's called. And they'll hang out and they'll just catch Pokemon together for 30 minutes. So if you love Pokemon, you're going to love this game. And that's all there is to it. And there are a lot of people who really love Pokemon. But if you don't love Pokemon, it's a fun little harmless treat during your day. Oh, I walked to the sugar bowl. Let me see if there's any Pokemon around here. Oh, it turns out there are. There's three of them around here. And it's a lot of fun. And it is absolutely not something that you can just sit at home by yourself and play. You can't. You have to be out. You have to be walking. You have to be traveling. You have to be where people are, where other people are looking for these Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. So Pokemon is not just for kids anymore.
No. Right. Well, kids at heart, I suppose.
Yeah.
The kids who grew up from those decades ago.
It's remarkable in that it's taken off as the first mainstream, I don't know if it's too soon to call it mainstream, but augmented reality game,
yes.
ARG. And what that means is, you know, you point your phone camera and you see the reader services desk, but next to the reader services desk, you also see a Pokemon, if that makes sense. So it's occupying the same space, the same reality as we are, but it's augmenting and changing it digitally. And it really has a lot of consequences that it's become so big so quickly in that it's only probably going to grow as it gets updated and upgraded
sure.
and all that. And so, I mean, the fact that it was able to become a good game right off the bat as soon as it launched mm-hmm. and kind of just took – like, I wasn't prepared for this.
No.
I don't know if anyone really was. I think it's just a really interesting transformation in gaming.
Yeah, I was
excited. Technology.
I was excited for launch day, but I did not expect, you know, there's a story in the New York Times about what is Pokemon Go? What mm-hmm. should you know about sure. Pokemon Go?
Yeah, and Forbes has at least a couple articles.
And it's only been a weekend. It launched on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really making a splash. I don't think anyone expected it to be this big. Niantic surely did not expect it to be this big because the servers are down half the time. So they don't have the hardware to back it up.
Now, was this created, the current version, by the same people from long ago?
Half and half. So Nintendo owns Pokemon. They always have. They always will. And they have a subsidiary called Game Freak / the Pokemon Company. And that's what they do, is they make Pokemon games. The Pokemon Company handles all the licensing for Pokemon, for toys and shirts and all that stuff. And then Game Freak makes the games. And it's the games. They come out every 2-3 years, and they've been coming out 4 decades, every 2 or 3 years. The Pokemon Company hooked up with another company called Niantic, which had a game similar to this that already existed called Ingress. Mm-hmm. And I actually know there are some people in the library who play Ingress.
Hmm.
I found out just recently talking about Pokemon Go. So Niantic had the experience, had the data, had the knowledge of how to make a game based in the real world. And all they had to do was, well, let's make Pokemon instead of Ingress, and there you have it. You've got an instant success. But Ingress was kind of generic, I want to say. There were, you know, things like portals and power and stuff like that, which doesn't grab you the way adorable little cartoon creatures do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it has a fan base already installed, whereas Ingress had to convince people to play it. Like, why should I download this? Is it really any fun? People I know who I don't know if they've played a Pokemon game in their lives, are downloading Pokemon Go and saying, I love this Pokemon. This is what they've been waiting for. The Game Boy games didn't do it, but Pokemon Go is some sort of accessibility that they haven't had before. Because it's not a video game. You don't have to know what's the A button do, what's the B button do, how do I jump, how do I fight. You don't do any of that. You just walk around and press some buttons. Anyone can do it. So there's a lot of accessibility Pokemon Go has that Pokemon Sun and Moon, perhaps, are a little bit more typical of the video game genre. So that's Pokemon Go. It's compelling. It is rewarding. And I haven't spent a dollar on it, so why not?
That was going to be my next question. How much does this cost, if anything?
Mm-hmm. It costs nothing to download, but if you want to use those power-ups that charge a Pokestop so you can get extra Pokemon, ooh, that'll cost you. Now you're going to spend some money here, some money there. Maybe a dollar or two, maybe a lot more if you go a little crazy. So it's up to you how much you spend. I spent $0. I think I will spend money on this, though. This may be my first mobile game. I talked about Clash Royale on the podcast before. I got in and out of that game, spent no money. But Pokemon Go, I think I'm going to spend some money getting some Pokecoins to buy some power-ups, some incubators, all sorts of things.
Cool.
Very cool.
Download now for your Android device from the Play Store or iOS on the App Store. And the Des Plaines Public Library, though we don't own the game or anything like that, is a gym. So come on down and challenge the Des Plaines Public Library staff, it sounds like, for your spot at the top of the gym. There's also a Pokestop across the street at the theater, next door in the Peace Garden, and there's a few more stops all around Des Plaines.
Can I ask you a quick question? How did this library come to be a gym?
I think just by being a library, by being a major. I haven't seen, but I would bet that the other major libraries in the suburbs are also gyms. And some funny offshoots of that, the White House is a gym. People assume that, you know, one of the Obama daughters must be playing Pokemon Go inside the White House, because how else would a Pokemon get to the top of that gym? You can't get that close to the White House. You can't walk up to it. I've also seen Pokestops in Air Force bases. People have posted that online. So don't climb any fences playing Pokemon Go. Stay out of the street. But otherwise, it's a lot of fun. And next, we're going to have our group discussion about Phoebe. THEEB, Thebe, is a movie that we recently came across. We own it here at the Des Plaines Library, but it's also available on Hoopla, our digital streaming service. If you are a Des Plaines cardholder, or maybe a cardholder at your public library has Hoopla, you can download and watch this movie for free. And why not? It is an Academy Award-nominated film from this past January, and it is quite amazing in certain aspects. I watched it just this morning, as a matter of fact. I had a busy weekend, and I had to get it done before the podcast. But it reminds me of Lawrence of Arabia in a lot of ways, with the long, big shots, the landscapes, the loneliness of the desert. So let's talk real quick about Thebe. Thebe is a young boy. His name is Thebe. That's where the movie gets its title. And he goes with his brother on a journey. And there's some big spoilers in this movie. I think we'll have to say that we're going to mention major plot points as we go, because otherwise we'll only be able to talk about the first 20 minutes of the movie, and that won't be very rewarding. So we are going to talk about spoilers in the movie Thebe. So if you're interested in watching, maybe watch it and come back later for the rest of the podcast. Anyway, a young boy goes on a journey with his older brother and a couple of strangers, one Arabic and one an Englishman. And they find themselves in some compromising situations. Before we get into the specific plot, though, what did you think of Thebe?
Well, I thought it was really gripping in that it kind of thwarted my expectations of what was going to happen. I don't know. It teases suspense only to early on keep the tone that of a travel movie, but then it does quickly turn into something much more intense. The violent aspects of, bandits, or I forget what they call them in the film.
Raiders,
yeah. And this kind of struggle for your life. I don't know, told the story in a very intense way, because it was just centered around really this one kid. You know, Thebe had a really hard journey, and the child actor did an absolutely amazing job. So you're with him along the way 100%. So,
Gwen, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. It was, as Tony said, gripping. It was very intense in spots. Two quick things that came to me. One is that as coming-of-age films go, I think it was quite good. It was very different from what we would be used to seeing here in the United States.
Yes.
But like you mentioned, Dave, it automatically reminded me of Lawrence of Arabia, the film, in that the Englishman was a soldier. The look of the movie, which leads to my second point, I had never seen a movie on Hoopla before. And the small screen of my laptop made me realize I would really like to see this incredible scenery on the big screen in a movie theater.
Yeah.
So if I ever get that opportunity, if there's ever a special showing or something of this, I know it's been out, at least a little while, so I don't know if that's a possibility, but I would definitely like to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, it's a lot of scenes of completely foreign desert, foreign to me, of course, of these wide shots of the desert, of the rocks, of the sand, of the wells struck me. They're going on this journey, and they're following the Pilgrim's Trail or something like that, and I'm like, what trail? There's no trail. They're just kind of, it seems to me like they're wandering. But what they're doing is following a series of wells, of water sources through this area of the desert. And it's amazing to me, the idea that if you lived at this place in this time, water sources were terribly important. And that's how you navigated your world was, well, we're this far from this water source or that far from that water source, I suppose, because there's no other, to my eye, major landmarks anywhere in this desert. There are certainly mountains and canyons and chasms and things like that. But otherwise, it's, all right, we're halfway to the next well. They're using camels to get around, baking bread just on the rocks with provisions that they take with. All that appeals to me. I don't know why. Something about the food on a journey always gets me about a story. I love The Hobbit for that reason.
Right.
I love when they're talking about hard cheeses and bread. What people eat when they're on the road, particularly a hard journey through the desert or a trip through Mirkwood, fascinates me. I don't know why.
Yeah, it didn't seem like there was much food or much water, particularly as time went on and events unfolded. The fact that Thebe survived at all is just mind-blowing,
sure,
given everything that happened to him.
Yeah, and the suspense, I felt from the beginning of this movie, there was suspense. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of the movie, Phoebe and his older brother tease a knife. They tease a gun. And I, you know, immediately start to worry, like, you know, how important are knives and guns to this culture that they're playing around with these in the first 5 minutes of the movie. From that point on, like, every shot of the movie, I was like, oh, something terrible is going to happen right, here. Something terrible is going to happen here. And it doesn't for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then it does in a big way.
Yeah, I would even say that the music was downright, you know, relax you. It changed the tone to something, shifted the tone to something lighthearted, specifically when they were camping or making food. And you could hear the crackling of the fire and you saw them breaking bread and sharing the bread with the soldier. It had this mood that was light, but you also knew something was lurking. And also the way that the scenery where they were camping out in this particular chasm, I think it was, mm-hmm. it felt as if they were in a vulnerable position. You know, it felt as if they're camping out, but, and maybe they're relaxed to a certain extent. And I think that toying with the idea that there's something inside of that box was also really good
because of
the suspense that that guy really, really was upset when Thebe went for his box and as if it was a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, the way that they played with the tone shifting up and down and even the scenery changing to that small, narrow place that would be like perfect for an ambush or something was just really interesting. It just taunts your expectations again.
Yeah. I'm no cinematographer, but it seemed like they were always being watched as that journey began.
Yeah.
And one of the characters even said that. I think it was Hussein, Thebe's brother. Okay. A couple of other things, not to change the subject, but I found the music, Tony and Dave, to be very haunting in one sense. I've heard music like that before, but I cannot recall which movie nor soundtrack it was. But it did fit, I think, with the material.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there were no women in this movie.
Nope.
There was one passing reference to if Thebe didn't behave himself around all of these men of varying ages, including, you know, middle aged to maybe somewhat older men, that he would be sent back to his mother. Well, where was mother?
You know? Who knows?
Yeah, that was one thing that was definitely left hanging. And then something else, too, is this is against a backdrop of history. So as events unfold, you see this is what, 1916? Supposedly it said
World War I, that's what I remember.
On the eve, was it during World War I or the eve of World War I?
I'm not sure exactly.
So you have these various factions fighting, and in my own mind, I would have liked to have known more about who's on which side.
Yes.
What divides them, and who's got the railroad, and, you know, all these various things.
And I think that's hidden from us on purpose, which is what brings the suspense. It's a lack of dramatic irony. We don't know. They know who they trust and why, but we don't know why. People trust other people, and you're like, why do you trust them? Why is this person trusting that person? I don't know. I'm very scared. So it's an exercise in trust. And it is, though, I didn't think of this till you said it just now, but it is a coming-of-age story for young Thebe. I thought of it more like a suspense film with a grand showcase for the desert. But it never occurred to me that how much Thebe grows from the beginning of the picture.
Yeah, what you said is part of it. I mean, this is a multifaceted type of movie, and Thebe will never be the same, obviously, after what he's gone through. And in a way, there's kind of a sadness about that because he was such a curious and precocious boy. I don't know how old he's supposed to be. Do you think the character was maybe like 10 or younger, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, and with those expressive eyes, he's always observing and always looking around. And after what he had to get past, there's no way he can ever go back and be a child again.
No, he's absolutely transformed by the end of the movie.
Right.
If I could draw a strange parallel, the video game Brothers jumped out at me while watching this movie. I don't know if you've played the video game Brothers.
No.
But it's very much the same, where a younger brother learns from his older brother how to navigate the world. Fans of that game, if you're looking for a similar theme, but in a movie medium, then Thebe is the movie for you.
Very much a brotherhood movie, too, because I guess their father had just died. And he was, if I'm pronouncing the word right, he was a well-known and well-respected sheikh in the region. So you have a situation where Hussein really is playing not only big brother, but father to Thebe.
Yes.
And that's why the loss was so great to Thebe, you know. Sorry to give that away, but...
we warned you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I even thought the musical theme was even... This is another strange parallel, but I thought the musical theme was strangely a lot like... Towards the end, when it did get more grim and more haunting, it sounded even a little bit like the Stark theme from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you caught that at all, but no. Just this long... I don't know if it was violin or cello or something, but... this kind of sadness built into the tone and standing for something, standing for brotherhood. And as each challenge kind of presents itself to the main character, it seemed like that theme kind of progressed and got a little bit more, I don't know, to me, it's just very visible. I just really like the soundtrack from the beginning. So
yeah, the beginning was when I remember the really haunting stuff. And then for some reason, the music kind of went out of my head and I was concentrating more on the visual. So I was probably able to go back. It wasn't always there.
Yeah, the music wasn't always there. But when it did show up, I thought it was very... And then there were a few songs that were sung kind of almost in jest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Kind of interesting.
What did you two think about the fact that the movie opens with Thebe looking at headstones in kind of a makeshift cemetery outside their tents? Were these Bedouins? I'm trying to remember if they were.
I don't know. I assume that was the father. I may be wrong, but that's what I assume in retrospect. I think it sets the tone of the movie, though that tone was quickly forgotten. I think it's very sneaky of them to have... Thebe considering death, staring at a headstone, but then he's immediately playing with his brother and watering the camels, and you get into, oh, this is a slice of life of what it's like to be Arabic at this time in the world, at this place. And I totally forgot about the headstones that open the movie.
Well, it was the second time I saw it that I noticed it, and that triangle that apparently was Thebe's family's or the clan's insignia or whatever the exact word would be, because then you saw him drawing it again much further on in the movie, but I don't know what the triangle symbolizes.
I'm just putting that together now.
Yeah. You got me, I don't know. But I definitely recommend this movie because I think if you have any interest in history whatsoever— to go back and look at it. Plus, it is so different from what we know today. Some of the things that they encountered along the way were so horrific. I don't know if children or adults today who have a relatively comfortable life here, what we would consider problems, probably would pale in comparison to what was encountered on that journey.
Sure.
It really puts things in perspective.
I think if you like suspense, I very strongly recommend this movie. It has a pervasive tone of suspense. Even when people are laughing and happy and eating, like I felt like they were in danger. Whenever you're doing anything, I felt like you're in danger in that movie. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. Argo made me feel that way, that everyone's in danger all the time. And that's how Thebe made me feel, is that this suspense is... I don't know how I can feel that way for 100 solid minutes, but I do the entire time. I'm worried about everybody and what terrible plot twist may happen next. Half the time, they don't happen at all. And I'm like, oh, I was a fool to be so concerned. And then,
Something else happens.
Something else happens soon after.
When they do happen, you're still shocked.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When they do happen, you're still shocked. Absolutely. So it's Thebe, T-H-E-E-B. It is available on DVD here at Des Plaines and possibly at your local library. It is in the foreign language section under Arabic. If you're looking for it here at Des Plaines, it is entirely in Arabic. It is subtitled, of course. But it's also available on Hoopla. So if you are a library patron at Des Plaines or your local library, you can go to hoopladigital.com and check it out and watch it for free on your laptop, on your TV, if you've got Chromecast or Amazon Fire or any of those neat things. Well, that'll do it for the Pint and Click podcast. Thank you, Gwen, so much for filling in.
Thank you for letting me fill in for Jamie. It was a pleasure.
No problem. And we'll see you next time on the Des Plaines Pint and Click podcast.